Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Text number 20. Chakshush Astari Samyoja Astaram Api Chakshushi Mamtacha Manasa Jayhan Visham Pasiti Dhurata Chakshu, the eyes, Trastadhi in the sun, Samjodhya, merging, Trastaram, the sun, Api, also, Chakshushi, in one's eyes, Ram, me, Tatra, there in the mutual merging of sun and eye. Manasa, within the mind. Jayan, meditating. Vishvam, everything. Pashyati, he sees. Durata, far away. Translation. Merging one's sight into the sun planet, and then the sun planet into one's eyes. One should meditate on me as existing within the combination of sun and vision. Thus one acquires the power to see any distant thing. Text number 21. Manomayesu samyocha deham tat anubhayuna maddarana dharana ubhavinha tatchatma yatchabhaymanaha. The yogi who completely absorbs his mind in me and who then makes use of the wind that follows the mind to absorb the material body in me obtains through the potency of meditation on me the mystic perfection by which his body immediately follows his mind wherever it goes. For Paul, Tad Anu Vayuna indicates the particular subtle air that follows the mind. When the yogi merges this air together with the body and mind in Krishna, by the potency of meditation on the Lord, his gross material body, like the subtle air, can follow the mind anywhere. This perfection is called Mano Java. So here, of course, Krishna is describing more of the mystic perfections that these, of course, are considered secondary, these ten. So he's describing these to Uddhava. From the materialistic perspective, of course, these seem to be very wonderful. But of course, devotees, we don't look at things from the materialistic perspective, we always look from Krishna's perspective to see whether something actually is wonderful or not. Here, the yogis, they can develop by this mystic perfection the ability to see any distant thing. We see that there are examples of that, of course, in Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, where some pilgrims came and they had heard that he is, you know, very wonderful, perfected mystic personality. And they asked him to show some example of his mystic potencies. Of course, as we know, Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, he was very disinclined when people would actually approach him and not asking for some spiritual benediction, but wasting his time asking for some material benediction or some, you know, useless show of magic, he would become very angry. So of course, when they asked for some display, he started beating the ground with a stick. And they were thinking, oh, you know, we've upset Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji. He said, no. So he was in somewhere near Mayapur. He said, no, I'm chasing away a goat that was trying to eat the tulsi leaf in Vrindavan. So he was seeing that in Vrindavan at that exact time, the goat was coming to eat the tulsi tree. So he was hitting a stick to chase it away. So these pilgrims, after that meeting, they actually, you know, there was some particular temple, so they actually sent a message to confirm, and they got confirmation back that yes, at that exact time, there was a disturbance, exactly as Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji had described. So, you know, that mystic perfection is there. But the difficulty is, of course, for the yogis, still, even with that, as far as material facilities are concerned, to take material facilities as far as you can take them, it is still very, very limited in comparison to the spiritual platform. So although they can perceive so many things at a distant place, because they don't have their spiritual vision, they can't even see their own self, which is the nearest thing to them. So, you know, we see with Sanatana Goswami, people called him a great pundit, and he said, what kind of pundit am I that I don't even know who I am? So the yogis are like this. Certainly, you know, it is very, very wonderful, but from the spiritual perspective, it is very, very limited. Not only can they not perceive their eternal spiritual form, and therefore their activities and relation, eternal relationships, they don't have that vision of the Krishna's eternal lila in the spiritual world. They cannot perceive that. Here again, it's described that by the mystic perfection, the yogis can also, what their mind thinks of, evidently there's a very subtle wind that follows the mind, and by practicing the particular method with meditation upon the Lord, one can actually, the material body can follow the mind, and you know, within a moment, attain some destination. But as described in the Brahma Samhita, that even such yogis, if they travel at that speed of the mind for millions and millions of years, still they can barely even approach the tip of the toe, you know, the effulgence at the tip of the toe of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So, you see, and that's at best And even that's very rare. So you see how very, very limited. Srila Prabhupada describes in the fourth chapter, in fourth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, in regard to the mystic perfections. He's describing these mystic perfections, and he describes that the spirit soul has unlimited independence. Of course, not unlimited in the sense of Krishna, but in the spiritual world, the spirit soul's freedom is beyond our perception to understand. Freedom of movement, freedom to act in so many different ways, beyond that, inconceivable. So much so that these, the greatest of these mystic potencies, mystic perfections of these yogis, seem very, 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 very limited. So it seems very wonderful. The problem is, they've really still got nowhere to go. It's just like I took the freeway this morning into the temple. Big mistake. So you've got these freeways, there's 3-4 lanes, and still, you're just chugging along at about 10-20 kilometres an hour. That saying, all dressed up and nowhere to go. The problem is that they're limited by the material existence. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the vulture with regard to vision. The vultures, they can see for miles. They fly up near the mountain tops, and they can look down, and we're struggling to see a huge tree, and they can see some little creature, little rabbit or something, very, very, very good eyesight. We couldn't imagine. But what do they see? With that good eyesight, they're just seeing dead bodies. So similarly with the yogis, they have this wonderful mystic perfections, but all they can see is generally something within material existence. At best, some of them can certainly attain the Brahman effulgence, but again, even if they attain the Brahman effulgence and realization of the Paramatma feature within the heart, ultimately, because they cannot perceive the spiritual world, Krishna Loka, and their eternal, spiritual form, relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately, it is a very severe limitation. Very, very big limitation. So from the spiritual perspective, someone in the spiritual world, or people from the spiritual world, such as the spiritual masters, Krishna, Uddhava, from their perspective, they see these mystic cities as, these, poor, handicapped, crippled people within material existence, even the yogis, so crippled, so blinded. They have these mystic perfections they can see anywhere, but they cannot see the self, they cannot see Krishna's Leela, they cannot see Srimad Radharani. So they're thinking, so handicapped, so crippled. Just like sometimes we see someone walking down the street, they're blind. You think, that poor person, how debilitating, how horrible that must be. So of course they, from the spiritual perspective, even the yogis are like that. what to speak of others. But Bhakti Yoga is here Krishna of course is explaining the comparison between Bhakti Yoga and other different processes, specifically in this chapter, the mystic cities. Bhakti Yoga is very, very powerful in all respects. It doesn't have these limitations that Krishna explains throughout the course of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. There's one verse that we chant at the beginning of when we do deity worship, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam, who knows that up by heart? What's that? Yes, that's it. But because the devotees, the transcendentalists, they can perceive the spiritual world. Just as one can see the sun in the sky, the transcendentalists can actually see the supreme abode of the Lord. And because they can see that, they can reveal it to others. So that is the vision of the Bhakti Yogis. So real vision, even the yogi's vision, if it is dependent upon the subtle or material body, it is very limited. But real vision comes with the transcendental eye, which is not different from transcendental knowledge. There's full consciousness. Actually, in the spiritual world, we sing the prayers to Krishna Govindamani Purusham that his body, all the senses of his body, their functions are interchangeable. That means that he can taste with any part of his body. He can impregnate the living entities within the material world through his eyes. So similarly, the living entities, they also have this quality that like father, like son, in the spiritual world their vision is not just with the eyes, it is their all the senses of their body are interchangeable, the same similarly. So their whole spiritual form is composed of full consciousness and full awareness, full vision. So the more one comes to the spiritual platform, the more one has proper vision. Consciousness in one sense is synonymous with vision. The more one has complete knowledge uncovered by ignorance, the more one has vision. The ultimate platform of knowledge is transcendental knowledge, and that is the highest platform of vision. The Vedic sciences, of course, there are different examples of that. Just like as an astrologer, we can, through knowledge, we can see something that others cannot. So quite often you do an astrological chart and you look at someone's life, and because that knowledge is not there for someone, they cannot see what is happening in my life, what will happen 1 month, 2 months, 10 years. They can't see that. An astrologer will, with access to knowledge, they can see, I can see your life. I can see, your troubles, your happinesses, and your death, the time, the wealth, to some degree or another, depending on how good an astrologer one is. But that that knowledge gives one vision. Similarly, there's the story of the person was cutting the branch of the tree, and he was sitting on, you know, the wrong side of the branch, and someone walked past and said that if you keep cutting that branch, you'll fall down. So, you know, and he's cutting, and sure enough, the branch fell down, he fell down, his saw fell down, and, you know, then when he got up, he said, you are like a mystic yogi, because you can see things, you know, even into the future, you know. So he's thinking this is very wonderful. But it is not so wonderful. It is that knowledge is there. You know, really that person just had some basic knowledge, and therefore he can see. He can see that person falling on his head. Okay? That vision is there. It may not be, you know, exactly like an exact photo replica of that person falling, but there is enough vision that he can perceive that person falling on the ground like that, you know. Similarly, the transcendentalists, they may not, you know, according to their transcendental realization, they can perceive the spiritual world. You know, even the beginning devotees actually can, you know, with transcendental knowledge, they can perceive the spiritual world. They've got this, you know, conception of the pastimes of Shrimati Radharani and Krishna and the groves of Vrindavan and Jamuna River, you know, and cowherd boys, and, you know, that is there. Gradually, as that transcendental knowledge increases, you know, it becomes more and more clear and focused. But even from the very beginning, that is there. So the bhakti yogi, from the very beginning, their vision actually is, you know, even though it's a little dim, it's still far greater than that of the yogis. Because they can perceive, you know, they're beginning to perceive beyond the material, you know, limitations and boundaries. They're beginning to perceive their spiritual nature. They're beginning to perceive the spiritual world. They're beginning to perceive their eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may not have the vision of the vulture, that they can see, you know, a dead mouse 2 miles away. But who needs that vision anyway? You know, who needs that vision? What is the value? And similarly, the bhakti yogis may not have the vision of the yogis, the mystic yogis, but who needs it? Yet, as we describe with Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, it is not that, you know, they do not. Sometimes Krishna, according to, in order to increase the faith of some in devotional service, he will allow his devotees to manifest, you know, those mystic potencies. But the devotees will only use that, those mystic potencies, if it actually has value in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if it has no value, they don't use it. So this according to bhakti, you know, one's vision is actually far excels that of the yogis. One can perceive things which are worthy of seeing, just like knowledge. We can have knowledge of so many things, but, you know, the majority of things that people learn about, there's no real value in it. That is the nature of material existence. It is you know, futility. Just as Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, people will, scientists will study the grass, and you know, they will study photosynthesis and why the grass is green, and you know, how it grows and how to, you know, how it absorbs air and moisture and what have you, and they've got all this like that. And they're so busy, you know, studying these things that they can never sit on the grass and have some prasadam and chant Hare Krishna. So what is the value of that knowledge? A devotee, they just see, oh, here's a nice patch of grass, here's a plate of prasadam, here's my friend, Bhakti so-and-so, let us sit, take prasadam. So, you know, there's... We can develop knowledge, we can develop vision, we can develop these things, but, you know, materially, these things are actually an allurement to prevent us from seeing what we really, our heart really should be seeing. So if you know, if a yogi has this transcendental, this mystic city, that they can perceive so many wonderful things. Imagine the distraction that they will be, you know, looking here, there, and in this way, completely allured away from perceiving the. So, in other words. Their vision, in one sense, is taking them away from reality. Their vision is taking them away from seeing the eternal reality. So it seems wonderful, but in the ultimate sense, it is, if we take it from the vision of the gopis, you know, they blink their eyes for one moment, and they're thinking, you know, what was Brahma thinking, you know, when he created these material bodies? That we would blink and not see Krishna for a moment. So you imagine they would be thinking of the yogis. You know, what a horrible thing. You have this vision, you can see so many things in the material world. What a distraction. What a horrible thing. So, it's very, very limited. Not only is it limited, they're not very... tasteful to the devotees. So that transcendental vision of the devotees through bhakti yoga, it carries over from lifetime to lifetime. And we see that in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, Krishna describes that, you know, the transcendentalist, the devotee, if they take birth again, then that transcendental vision remains with them. That transcendental knowledge, they look at the world with transcendental vision, and they can perceive, very young, they can see in a different way. You know, they're looking, for something. Where is that spiritual world? And they can perceive, this is not it. There's something wrong here. This is not what I, came here for. That is there. Sometimes we can see there are different ways of seeing, just like knowledge. You can sometimes see by what is present, and sometimes you see by its absence. So, sometimes we take birth and we're seeing, something is missing. And until I see that thing, to give an example, I did some art before I was a devotee, and I got to a stage where I wanted some inspiration. I wanted to, have some vision of something to paint, which I thought would be just very original, very inspiring, something that's and very beautiful. I sort of just, I used to go out into the country, and I'd be looking at the sunsets and the mountains and this and that, and people and you know, so many things, and just what I was looking for, it was absent. I couldn't see it. Couldn't see it anywhere. One day I actually went all around the, you know, all the art galleries. I spent a couple of days looking everywhere, you know, looking at all people's paintings. I looked at books of painting. And then I went home disappointed. I, you know, didn't see what I was looking for. I think it was the next day, I was in an opportunity shop. And I, just as I was walking out the door, I just sort of glanced up right down the back of the shop, sort of on the top above, you know, some racks. There's this picture. And I thought, oh, yeah, what is that? It caught my eye, and I went up to have a closer look, and I thought, that's it. That's the picture, that's the vision, that's the beauty, the originality, that's what I'm looking for. And it was actually a picture of Krishna, you know, a picture of Krishna. He's got the long hair, he's got the flute, and he's sitting like on a rock, and there's a little calf just beside in front. Very beautiful picture. And I saw that picture and I thought, that's it. That's so beautiful. Is that a boy? Is that a girl? It was so beautiful. And you know, there's just the nature, and he's got the flute, beautifully dressed. You know, everything was just, you know, everything you'd want there was just there, you know, in a beautiful balance, everything in the colour. And I thought, that's it. And then I was really happy that I found, you know, that. But then I was also a little unhappy because I thought, well, it's already been done. So now, you know, I'm not going to paint anything now anyway, because that's probably what I would have painted, and someone's already done it. So I just dropped that whole idea. But, you know, you can see sometimes by what's not present. And but this, you know, the transcendental vision of the devotees, it far excels the yogis, and their freedom of movement. What to speak of the fact when they actually return to the spiritual world. Again, just, you know, some reflections on some of the things that I look back on that probably. I mean, I took a very, you know, obviously very sinful person in this life. I know that. What I did in the last life, I'm not sure, but I must have been a bit of a rascal. I took birth in a family of very sinful people, and my, you know, father was a butcher and what have you. Mother's very nice, but anyway, I remember when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I used to wash the dishes, and of course my father's butcher's knives, you know, were in the sink, and he'd always tell me to be very careful, very sharp. May not be as sharp as your knives, but very, very sharp, you know. You just got to touch the skin and they just immediately cut. So I used to have to wash them. So anyway, one day I was washing up these knives, and I picked one up and I thought, that is so dangerous. You know, like I'm about 7 years old. I'm thinking, you know, that could kill me. You know, here I'm washing the dishes, you know. Everyone's watching TV, I think. And then I thought to myself, then you think about death. You think, gee, that could kill me. I could die. And I think, what if I killed myself now? You know, like, what would happen? And I started to think, if I died now, it just sort of one thing led to another, but I thought, if I died now, what would I miss? So I started to actually, within my mind, I started to see my whole life. You know? As I said, not exactly photographically, but I could see. And I was thinking, okay, I'm in primary school now, so there's another few years of that. Well, I'm not going to miss anything there. Secondary school, oh my goodness, you know, I'm not going to miss anything there. I didn't want to go to school. I went to school just for the social life, that was it. And then I thought, then, you know, I'll get a job, hopefully not like my father, but probably some job, 9 to 5, know, and I'm going to have to work, and I'll have a family, probably a few kids, you know, nice wife, get a house, pay the bills, and then because of, you know, like my mum and dad, I can see that, and everyone else, you're going to be working, you know, paying the bills, and never any more time to play, and never any more time to run around with your friends, you know. I just like every other adult in this world, they just run it, just, you know, always worry, oh, here's the telephone bill, more work, I just, you know, come home too tired to do anything, too tired to spend time with their own family like that. And I could see it, and then I thought, and then I'll grow old. And I'm certainly not going to miss anything there. And then I'm going to die. So actually, you know, I've run through step by step. And I could see, and I thought, well, gee, you know, why not, you know, not that I was thinking to kill myself, but I was thinking, you know, what would be the harm? You know, it's like people are so fearful of death, and I'm thinking, what's the big thing? You know, it's like you die, what do you actually miss out on? And I thought there must be something else that's a good reason to be alive. And I thought, oh, maybe I can help make other people happy or something, you know, a few things like that went through my mind. It wasn't very clear, but I thought, you know, it must be something good like that, perhaps, you know, I'll find it at some stage like that. But, you know, as I look back on it now, although, as I said, although obviously, you know, very unfortunate birth, but there must have been some little bit of association with devotees somewhere, perhaps, you know, in a previous life, to, you know, be thinking like that as a child. You know, there's, and you know, you can see, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, that vision and that transcendental knowledge, it just automatically revived, you know, if one is not successful. But of course, but even that vision as a 7-year-old child, to understand in one sense the futility of material existence, some of the yogis don't have that. They're still thinking, if I can get the maximum amount of power, you know, I'm really going to, you know, be well situated, you know. But actually, to be situated as a devotee, you have to have that vision, that there is no chance of happiness in this material world. you actually, you know, that platform, that understanding is very important, you know. The more that's there, the better chance you've got, you know, of actually having a very realistic and enthusiastic approach to bhakti, you know, that, you know, even the best facility that's offered in this material world, compared to what I can get in the spiritual world, is just nothing, you know. The vision of the yogis to me is just blindness. This so-called freedom to move, if I cannot walk over and hug Sri Krishna, is being a cripple. All these different facilities, even to the maximum amount, that they add up to nothing. That is the vision. There's no chance of happiness, you know. So Bhakti Yoga certainly offers, even from the very beginning stages, contact with one's own spiritual nature and contact with the Supreme Lord, and that offers the unlimited freedom of activity and movements and consciousness, and freedom to love and experience ananda, the transcendental nectar of Krishna consciousness. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any comments or questions, it would, no.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.